Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin. With guest co-host...
Dusain.
Yada yada yada... blah.
That could just sum up the whole podcast. Yada 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 and blah.
Okay, guest, introduce thine self.
Who's the guest? Hello, my name is Shane.
Oh, who are you replacing as a regular co-host, supposedly? Who's the uprising against?
I decided that Dan Q was kind of, you know, a little bit of a troublemaker, so I'm taking over on his spot.
A little bit of a troublemaker? A little.
Well, after the city-state, he's a massive troublemaker.
He bullies. He's such a bully.
You're not a sufficient troublemaker, Dan. You're off.
I was about to say, you might want to choose carefully, you know, the person that promotes and publishes and edits the show. I guess you've agreed to take over those responsibilities.
Dan's like, woo, more free time.
Well, enjoy that.
Yep.
It was by force and not through consensus. My documentation for use the middle finger.
No, I persuaded by force.
Persuaded by force? Are you using some arc spies there?
Should we start?
What?
I don't know. Should we?
No, we'll never start. Never. It's not going to happen.
It's never start.
Okay.
Are you
okay.
People? Why is this not Fallout 4?
We have a topics list. We're just going to ignore that
you.
And talk for 2 hours.
I think you have more hours than me, so shush.
I'll do an intro. Right? We good? We starting?
Sure.
Wait a minute. You're doing an intro for Polycast, right? Just to make sure.
You're not for that podcast.
No, that's a different podcast. Not that one.
Yeah, it's this podcast. You want an introduction for this podcast, not that podcast.
Hey, welcome to the Polycast where the points don't matter. That's right. The points are just like the points in your civilization games. The points don't matter. Reading from top to bottom, Dan Q.
Shoehorn.
Bakalua.
Coffee, 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 coffee.
The Mean Team.
Points that matter are the points on my army spears.
And Mad Jin.
Are you trying to be the adult from Charlie Brown and be wah, 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 wah?
No, I was doing that to Drusian when he was having issues hearing or talking.
Yeah, but we're done.
I joined at, like, the tail end that, like, you guys are talking about that, but I didn't get to hear it myself.
No, it was pretty much wah, wah, wah about, you know, 5 minutes
yeah.
of that.
Yeah, I can picture. I can picture in an audio sense.
Picture in an audio sense. Yeah. Yeah, let's go with that.
The mind's eye, if you will.
Yeah, it's like editing in Audacity, right? You hear something and you can just see what it looks like.
Episode 241 feedback, seeing as how this is episode 242, it stands to reason that if we receive feedback for the previous episode. Interesting episode, Big Greeny Face from Stormtrooper 412. Very fun to listen to, as always, Smiley Face. My ideas for war score. If you're dominating, and yes, this is in the context of Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, you should be allowed to give up half, your war score to force an AI to make peace, and you should be able to tell the AI not to settle near you, etc. And if they decline, you get a bonus modifier for your war score if you declare war on them within a timer.
Essentially, it's like a Cass's Bell, right? It's mirroring that concept. You're going to war over something, and you get points towards that something if you declare over it and take it. It's a similar concept to that. It's not exactly what's written there, but that's the idea, basically. You're going to war with a reason, and you get points towards that reason. I'm not sure how important that is to the game, but I think the dominating aspect, and I would go a little less than half, that really needs to be there, and not just against the AI, against human players as well, because it forces you to consider things in terms of protecting yourself. If someone can force you into unfavorable peace deals, that gives you extra incentive to avoid them racking up war score on you. That would add to the strategy of the game by a lot. It really needs to be there.
Yeah, because you can never just make it an AI thing. It has to be also against players, because otherwise players will just ignore you all the way.
Yeah, until they're off the map.
Yep. So, yeah, you have to be able to make it work so that players have to accept it as well. But yes, if you make it to dominating, which is the top level, which is usually like a massive one-sided war, then yeah, you should be able to start making up your own peace deal and just saying, screw it. This is what it, give me what we're doing. Of course, with the usual caveats that I don't like cities just flying out of nowhere if you never actually got to it.
Although if you are literally dominating the war, that's implying that you've either shredded a ton of units or you are taking cities already.
Well, one assumes if you hit dominating that you took cities. But again, I think on that note, I think I've said a long time ago that I don't want anybody hitting the upper tiers of the war score, like dominating in that, without actually taking cities first. So as long as you have to take cities before you hit the top levels, then it all works itself out.
Yeah, defensive offense is a little silly. You just declare kill a bunch of units and take stuff over and over. Yep.
On Black Market, I was actually surprised how useful this is in my modded games. Since that patch, I found myself so often going for a little bit of extra titanium for more orbital units or other resources for that extra building that I just unlocked. And I was so disappointed when I found out that I couldn't create geothermal that way. Unfortunately, in the actual unmodded game, there is little to no time to really use it, as games just end too fast to really profit from the investment. And I had asked him in reply, and we're still waiting. I just said, what is it about your modded games that makes the black market useful? Either through peaceful settling, warring expansion, external trade routes, or a combination of both would appear to give you what you are looking for otherwise, as we've discussed on previous episodes. So hopefully we'll get some clarification on that, because when you say you've got modded games, that actually doesn't tell me a lot, because to mod the game is a very broad statement.
Well, yeah, it depends on which mod he's using. Could be one that slows things down. So that having extra the time to do black market stuff to get the titanium or whatever could be more useful if it was a bit slower of a game.
Couldn't slower game speeds also do that?
Yeah, but then you're still based on the silliness of spying and other crap to blast through the tech tree.
That's true, but the number of turns you get to move a given unit you produce around is much greater, and so the resources are a little bit more emphasized.
Yep, but I like the concept of it, sort of.
And on a completely different track from Matt Zed, that's Matt and then Z-E-D, I recently started playing Civ and listening to Polycast again since Rising Tide came out. It's great to see the episodes are still entertaining and informative. Aww. So I'd replied, welcome back, listener, and thank you kindly. However, I don't think I really get the time machine segment. I usually listen to Polycast to hear discussion between the hosts, and it felt a little weird to have a few minutes of script reading.
It was.
I'm not sure what the original segment looked like in seasons past, but I think I would have preferred to hear more of a retrospective discussion about Civ 4 and how the game feels now, looking back on it. And my reply was, this was the first time the time machine segment was scripted, and only on rare occasions is there anything that is scripted on the show beyond the, here's the template for the introduction, here's the template for the closing, here's where you send the money for being on the show. I mean, no, that doesn't happen. Yeah, imagine I need to talk to you about that. You're a little...
Send all the emails to you.
I said, anticipating extended discussion on the first patch for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, which was realized, I made the decision, I will take responsibility for this, rightly so, to acknowledge the anniversary of Civilization IV release in this way and in a short block of time. To your comment about your preference, though, Matt Zed, I recommend the forum talk topic comparing a number of aspects of Civilization IV and V as of then on episode 125 from 2011. Now, it is not an exact match as it was recorded before either expansion for Civ 5 was released, but still a close match even today. He also said that he listened to episode 240 and he really liked the mini-interview format and would actually have preferred they went on a little longer. It seemed like those guys had a lot to say, and since they're not the regulars, it'd be nice to hear more to see what other opinions the community has. And I responded that you're touching on a double-edged sword here. I see the guest rotational approach for an individual episode. You get greater breadth at the expense of greater depth of opinions expressed, otherwise we'll be recording for 3 or 4 hours. It is primarily for this reason that we take this approach only on special occasions, such as surely after a new Civ title has been released, where experience with it is likely not sufficient for depth just yet. Moreover, on subsequent appearances where one or more of these and or other individuals are a or the guest for an entire recording, depth will have the better opportunity to surface. So, Drew, yeah, you got your work cut out for you.
What?
Just before we talk about episode 240, Redux, I do want to say the last episode of Polycast was particularly interesting because we talked about four different Civilization titles. We talked about Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, Civilization 4, Civilization 5, and Civilization Revolution 2+.
We also got more feedback on episode 240, because I'm pretty sure we talked about this. No, we didn't.
No, because the
last... just like
the last time we recorded an episode, 241, there were two replies, and one of those replies was my own. Mm. Since then, we've had more than 20 other replies, and the vast majority were not mine.
Yeah. Defiant Mars, I guess I'll go with where he started. The one topic he wants to talk about more is affinities. So with the changes in BERT, with the affinities and addition of hybrids, he thinks it's the most refreshing and frustrating at the same time for the changes. He likes how it's been set up with the affinity wheel and the little bonuses have been changed. Well, some little, some big, based on all the affinity levels, and he goes through the list of it, which I'm sure at some point we did. He says it feels like they have more emphasis on their philosophy, a slightly better outline, but slightly. But what he doesn't like, the frustration, is as much as it was touted as hyping up the hybrids as their own answers, not just a 50-50 combo of two core affinities, he's like, yeah, it's almost the exact opposite of that. It really is a combo, and the hybrid affinities don't even have all of the base units in it. So they're missing missile rovers, subs, carriers, and tac jets. Now, I think for tac jets and stuff, the designers probably, like Will and Dave, probably just thought no one would ever go that high in hybrid affinities. But when you're trying to say, well, you can go hybrid all the way, well, no, you can't. And that's kind of the problem that I think most people have with it, the hybrid.
Sorry, I thought you were going to say, I don't think Will and Dave thought anybody would actually use tac jets.
That's what I was thinking too.
And I was kind of disappointed. I was like, oh, man.
I don't really use tac jets unless I get the...
Yeah, because naval is so ridiculously overpowered now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Tac jets are great once you get the artifact booster, you know, the extra range. And
oh, yeah, and the chitin.
Yeah.
It's true. They can attack from places where if you have any other unit there, they can't reach the enemy. So there are extra damage if you have the hammers at that stage to speed things up a bit. Not completely useless.
Yeah, well, once you throw in the 50% boost to them, they're actually roughly equivalent to most units at their level, which means that they actually do real damage when they attack.
Yeah, and the increased range, especially on land, our border with an opponent, and you're trying to take their cities, or they're trying to come in and take their cities back, or even trying to take your cities. They can be good for defense, but if I can hit them with a naval unit, or I've got some particularly strong melee units in the field that I can just kind of go squish, then, yeah, tac jets are an afterthought that never is realized.
Hmm. Yeah, they're better for pitched battles, which you're not going to see a lot against the AI when it embarks units for free kills. But it lets you focus fire on a hex as well to kill things, and you can often finagle it so you're not committing a unit to get exposed that way, too. They have their place in the game. They're not amazing, but they're...
There's also boosts versus wounded units, and so they're really good for at least helping ensure that happens.
I think they would be more spectacular if, when we talk about promotions, for example, Beyond Earth, it is nothing like it is in Civilization V. It's like, you can automatically heal or get a 10% bonus unless you construct whatever that wonder is in that technology that then allows you to get, what, two promotions on a military unit?
Oh, man.
Even then, it's kind of like, oh, really? What the hell?
I actually missed Civ 4 promotions because it had the most tactical significance, in my opinion, although the Civ 5 had a lot, too. Both of those games are a really good model. I don't know why they ditched it. There's a lot you could have done with promotions that would have been interesting in Beyond Earth.
Well, especially since tac jets are the only jets.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, as well. But
you know, the first time that I heard about the hybrid affinities, the first thing I thought was make more use of the hybrid units. I thought, well, that's interesting, but doesn't that sort of hinder you to your goal to actually win the game, which is to get more very, very high affinity? Is this hybrid unit thing sort of clash with the fact that you're still trying to win the game, and in order to win the game, you need high affinity?
Well, you don't need high affinity. You can kill everyone. It doesn't matter what your affinity is. So if you want to haul in somebody with strong hybrid units and just take all the capitals, you do win.
Yeah.
You want higher.
Well, you can go contact victory and don't need affinity.
Yeah, that's true too.
But for the three normal, quote-unquote normal, victories, yes, you basically have to ignore hybrid. I mean, you can use hybrid up to a certain point, and then after that, you basically go, well, I want to win this way, so yes, we're no longer hybrid. We're just going to push this one.
I mean, I guess that makes the non-affinity victories a little more appetizing, I guess, but oh well.
They were already the easier ones.
Domination is always the top victory anyway, so whatever.
To me, having hybrid affinities is not about the units at all. It's about those, I can't even believe I'm going to use this word. I slap myself for it. Synergy. Because especially if you're on the domination track, what is that? Is it five across all three? The 25% reduction to one health for number of cities?
It's five.
When you're taking cities, and you would rather not have, admittedly, the hit from unhealth is not like, oh my gosh, rebels responding in Civ 5. But still, it would be nice to be able to at least stay in positive health, or at least not too negative health, so you're not getting a hit to your production, you're not getting a hit to your culture.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's 5-5-5, so Harmony, Supremacy, go figure, is the worst combo, because you just get a flat 5 health. But Purity, with either of the other two, either gives you the 25% reduction per city, or the reduction per pop. Yeah. It's just the, hey, look, I don't need virtues anymore because I just go 5-5-5 and look, I've got lots of health again.
Well, it's good because if you're doing that, you probably took might.
The hybrids, some things are nice. Other things are just kind of eh. Like all the new fancy units are mostly eh, because if you're not just screwing around in the tech tree, you'll never see them, or you get to them and it's like, oh, well, I got to the level 2 hybrid unit. Great. By the time I got there, I've already got tier 3 or tier 4 base units that are actually stronger. Yay!
So if at least those hybrid units had something that would maybe help them in a particular situation, like, okay, the base strength is slightly lower than what I can get at, say, a level 3 or level 4 tier, but in this particular circumstance, like fighting on this particular terrain or fighting this type of unit on land, that there would be a bonus and it would make up for it, then yeah, tactical, more situational, but then it might be, oh, I'm actually purposely going to get this hybrid unit, as opposed to this hybrid unit comes with this technology, which I got for something else, and now it's incidental, I could build it, and I could do it for the lulls, but, oh, it's going to cost me Floatstone, for example, or it's going to cost me Xenomass. I would rather have this other unit, which is stronger, and put in my strategic resources into constructing and maintaining them.
Yeah, basically. I mean, some of them are kind of cool, but you can easily have the affinity to fully upgrade, total upgrade, a hybrid unit before you actually get to the unit. And that, to me, is just wrong. The pacing of them, like, if it's a 2-2 hybrid, you should be able to get that really, really quickly. Actually get it when it's early in the game versus much, much later. Plus, you know, there is no victory conditions for hybrids other than the two base ones that don't need affinity, which I'm sure most people would have preferred to see three more types of victory conditions.
You know, and something nicer at the higher levels, if you get those high-end units, still have something to do with the hybrid stuff. Come on, yeah. Give me a bonus for working up 2 out of 3 affinities that high.
Although if you spy well, you can have all 3 at 18.
Yeah.
Very easily.
One imagines that'll get brought down a little bit in patches eventually, but maybe not, because it's been around for a while. We'll see.
Nope. It's been more than a year, multiple patches and an expansion, and they seem to just refuse to fix spy tech stealing and the resource pod tech boost.
I mean, maybe they just want tech to be easy in this game, unlike every other Civ game where like it took a lot of skill to out-tech people heavily.
They don't want us to be quite so frustrated. Here,
I don't know. Like, there's something to be said, though, for having a big payoff for effective micromanagement and choices, as opposed to just getting your tech. Like,
it's not effective micromanagement and choices.
Well, not this time. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's
like that was
bad.
A real thing in Civ 4 and Civ 5, to I would say a lesser extent, but it was still a real thing. Whereas in this game, I mean, what do you really need to do from a micromanagement or planning perspective to keep up in tech on Apollo? I mean, what do you really need to do?
Nothing. I mean, people used to go mass academies, but you don't really need to do that
either. You can. I mean, if you're trying to compete against other people's technology finish times, then that still has some merit. There is still some planning there. But if it's just keeping up, it's not really. When you're competing against other people, there's always an edge to be had as opposed to the AI.
Yeah, we've got this unusual matrix. Like, to me, there is the premise, intent, and execution, or PI, if you will.
PI?
Stop reading management books.
Seriously. Next, you're going to tell us we need to move our goat.
Because what we have here is we have a technology web as opposed to a technology tree. So the idea is you're going to be selective in terms of the technologies that you choose. The idea is not to grab every single thing on the web. And in fact, the idea is that this would be counterproductive. You have a particular victory condition that you want to go for. you want to go down this path. Maybe you get a block here or a block there, and there's some other ways to route around it. But the idea is not to eventually have to grab everything, limit the bottlenecks. Yet when you contrast that with the strength of the covert ops, whether or not you're the American Reclamation Corporation or the Chengdu, although especially if you are, especially ARC, it's the ability to get science and accumulate science where after X number of turns, again, especially with ARC, and we've talked about this before, get the equivalent science output of 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 turns, then you don't have to worry about being so selective about what's in the technology web. You get what you want, but then you start grabbing everything. And then I feel like, so this is just a much larger technology tree now because I start accumulating science because I can. And so I'm going to continue to put it into these particular technologies. And I get these technologies way earlier in the game than I would have otherwise have been able to, or maybe even should have, because I'm not worrying about the quality. I don't have to worry about the quality of the tech. I can get the quantity and I can have the quality at the same time. I don't have to make a choice. Ouch.
Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting for somebody to post a sub-turn 100 Apollo victory. I'm sure it's possible at this point, especially with the war score change for getting free text.
You mean standard settings, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can't picture that being challenging for anyone on Duel.
But Defiant Mars, reining back just a little bit, when you say hybrids make me feel very conflicted and the units end up feeling supplementary and exactly like half and half mixes, yes, we are in agreement with you, sir.
Pretty much. Galgus brought up, he loves the new loading screens. They're cool. That's one nice thing I don't think we ever really brought up, is that the crappy Starfield got removed, and now we actually have cool concept art popping in there.
With little factoids about the leaders.
On Reddit, anyway, there is a thread with regards to Rising Tide and people saying, so what more do we know about the sponsors now from the loading screen and the backstory and the interrelationships between the leaders, building that lore, which, of course, gives it much more of an Alpha Centauri feel in that respect for people who are interested in that and want that. So, yeah, those changes are very nice. You can't help but look at the artwork and then read the text. If only the attention to some other elements of the game were given this attention. I just, Elsewhere from 240, Westfall had said, too bad artifacts are too few and far between. Too often I've gotten no more than 5 to 7 before the game simply stops giving them, making you miss out on all those bonuses and buildings and wonders and lore.
I guess it depends on your setting, because I've had some games where I've garnered tons and tons and tons and tons of them. Especially since the AI, for some reason, is completely incompetent and does not know how to build an explorer when there's artifact locations all around them. Once they're done with their initial ones, they never, ever go back and build more.
And as we've said before, nothing is better when you have good enough relations and Beyond Earth Rising Tide that you can move into their territory that has one of these things and you're able to construct an expedition and they don't get pissy. I mean, in vanilla Beyond Earth, they get pissy if it was within a few hexes of their borders and they tell you so.
Yeah, they get pissy if it was 10 hexes away from their borders.
Now they don't care, and they're more frequent and more powerful, so that makes sense.
Oh. Maybe your friend's just trying to help you out, Dan.
Oops.
And clearly he's not going to use it, ever, so...
like Utama is ever my friend.
Well, he might think he is, though, and that's to your advantage.
That's what you do with diplomacy. You make people think you're their friends when really you're plotting to kill them.
Exactly. Mackie understands.
Mackie, this is not Politicast. Why would you say that? I mean... Galgus says that the artifacts would feel more satisfying to get and be more balanced if aliens attacked expeditions and they took soldiers to defend.
Oh,
well,
man.
I mean, look, if there is an expedition near an alien nest and you have even once flinched, and by that I mean attacked an alien, just once, not even killed it, your explorer is probably going to get whacked.
Mm-hmm.
They may not die right away, depending upon the units that are around, but I think it should be, yes, in relation to where the nest is, and also your general relationship with the aliens so far, but at certain points, and it's kind of an interesting balance, actually, touch a bit on the virtues, where I like going down the might tree, and it's okay, I'm going to get so much science for killing an alien. Yet at the same time, given what I can get from expeditions and getting those artifacts and getting the resource pods, and I see they're around the aliens, at times my question is, okay, when do I start attacking the aliens? Because I'm going to be able to get more quickly in terms of science, as opposed to continuing to go and get those resource pods, especially with that, certain... What setting is that under that reveals all expedition sites?
It actually would be interesting if the AI actually did grab, or at least built an explorer to go with it when it was going after the nest, because in Civ 5, the AI was able to put a small army together and go take out a Barb Hut area. And sometimes the AI will do that in PE, sort of, but not really as well as it did in Civ 5.
Yeah, they love to put their little naval fleet together and go pound on Hydra Coral.
Yeah, on land a little less.
Yeah, and you know, AI, if you're exploring and your explorer doesn't have any expeditions left and you realize that there's an expedition site there, the AI should be like, either I need to construct another explorer and get there so I can get there more quickly, or, I don't know, send that explorer back and fill up again on the number of expeditions and go get it. I mean, seriously.
Beyond Earth, we've got a sort of a versus thing here. Virtues versus each other. Are we all still in our same favorites here?
Yes, now in Rising Tide, all other things being created equal, what is the virtue tree or trees that we tend to go down more frequently than not, and why do we do that?
Well, initially, when the game was first out, I was doing more of a prosperity and knowledge, but now I've been going in prosperity just far enough to get the extra expeditions because they're so valuable now, but then the rest is might. Sometimes I'll go might first to get the scavenging, because if you've noticed, I think everybody since the expansion came out has been like open season on the aliens because of scavenging. And if you keep going down might, there's things like the extra affinity for every, when you research the technologies, and then extra strategic resources and things. And another one gives energy and production off of strategic resources. There's actually a lot more use to that. I can't remember if it was that good in the vanilla.
I don't have the expansion, but I'm going to vote with the might path as well, especially given the knowledge of the 555 health thing. In addition to the lulzy, just might farming the aliens, your health problems aren't as bad as they were on vanilla release if you're mass conquering in the first place. So coupled with the fact that you really don't need to invest much in the way of virtues to tech either, just making your units better is more fun.
I'm similar, as Mackie was saying, and towards what Phil is saying as well. There was a time initially when I was going might from the very beginning, and then I would go down prosperity. But I started to realize, you know, Dan, you have a city from the outset that could be benefiting from prosperity. But constructing those military units, getting them out there, and then attacking the aliens, that's going to come not so much at the start of the game. So if you go down prosperity, especially to the point, and Mackie said, yes, the Pathfinders where the Explorer units can get additional expeditions. Then I start going down might, because then you've got the stacking for more from combat, greater strength from attacking the aliens. We talked about actually health, and there's also increased health for every military unit under your command.
Yeah, that's true. It's not completely lacking.
Yeah, so that's on tier 1 and tier 2. Mackie already mentioned the production and the energy from strategic resources. You've also got the affinity level, which is excellent. And if you go down to 3, especially if you're fielding a lot of military units, then minus 50% maintenance for those units. So for me, it's for most of the game, it's a prosperity and might combination where prosperity to start, then switching over to might. And then when I get kind of mid to late game, I will start dipping into knowledge for the increase in science and the increase in culture for population and the increase for health with regards to population in tier 1 and a little bit into tier 2. Maybe I'm doing myself a disservice at times with regards to effectively ignoring industry. And being someone who is a domination player, I think I need to look a little bit more at that and recognize that there may be times that perhaps I should be introducing industry at some points, and maybe even at the expense of something else. But when you're able to position yourself so quickly in a domination situation, or quite frankly, even if you're not going domination, might, and the ability to get science from killing aliens, you want to get to that tech that's going to get you an emancipation victory? Go squish aliens.
Okay, so knowledge is literally the most useless virtue tree. Literally. Because everything you just talked about there requires super high pop, and you get almost nothing out of it. I mean, I do like the science and the culture for pop sometimes if I'm going super tall, because it only takes 2 to get there. 2 or 3 options, because then you get the plus 10% at the beginning. Plus 10% science for being happy. That's fine. You can take those 3 and literally ignore the rest of the tree, unless I'm going mass spy, at which point I'll go further in. Because the health option on that, you get 1 for every 6 pop. Ooh, that's literally garbage compared to every other one, except for maybe the might military unit one, because you only get 0.25 per unit. And if you're spamming so many units to actually do that, you probably broke your economy. So yeah, there are better options. Industry is like way better on that note because of all the trade route spam. The trade route related health bonus is way nicer, plus the internal trade route booster and the production per pop is also nicer. I mean, I also agree on the whole, I do it all the time, just straight to killing aliens for science. Awesome. Very good early game mass push. But I also keep pushing to the boosted affinity from tech, because then you use that science to hit all the early game affinity boosters. And since they're all good enough to give you 2, maybe 3 total levels out of that, you can start getting your hybrids up faster by doing that, which means that you steamroll a bit faster as well. Prosperity straight down to the boosted production, like the entire left line right down to extra production from basic resources. I like doing every once in a while. If there's a lot of expedition sites, then it makes more sense to go that route as well. But just straight down to the extra +1 production from basic resources, because if you have a lot of them near you and you're lacking strategic resources near you, then it's really nice. And then, of course, you can always step in for a couple virtues into industry again and get the extra energy per basic resource. Mm. So you combo those and all of a sudden your really, really simple basic resources are like mass yield, especially with a couple other tech-based boosters. I literally can't make myself take the Free Settler anymore from Prosperity.
Me neither.
I know people on the forums keep talking about like, this is the first thing I do. I go get it and then I go do other stuff. And I'm sure it's semi-useful, but I just can't make myself take it anymore.
And I think to me, it's about if I take that, then I'm also thinking about I would like the additional expeditions for explorers, except the way it's pathed, I'm going the wrong way for that.
It's a dead end.
So it's like, oh, on balance, you might say it is a short-term gain, but it's longer-term pain, number one, because of the pathing. But quite frankly, I think explorer units being able to construct 3 additional expeditions is going to get you much farther ahead more quickly than being able to get a free settler.
Yeah, because there's so many things you pick up out of exploration now.
The opportunity cost is just woohoo!
Well, I also think about much further down the prosperity tree. Getting to that extra production or the other stuff at the bottom is more important to me than early settler. But that's assuming I go prosperity direct that way. I usually go the other way, straight into night. Oh yeah, and speaking of it, going straight into might for the science from killing aliens, I almost always grab the culture from kills on top of that for the traits. Get that as quickly as possible. And then that forces you right down the might tree. As you're getting all the science, you're getting all the extra culture, which just gives you more virtues. Makes aliens much nicer to kill.
Aliens are your science funding.
Yeah.
Science funding?
Mm-hmm. Here's a whole new meaning of science funding. Yep.
It sort of does depend on the empire style you're building, though. Like, if you're going super wide, then industry is actually pretty useful, along with prosperity.
Although, with regards to the killing aliens, depending upon the biome that you go down, not saying it's not good, but there are some biomes that are better. I particularly like lush biome because there's more aliens and they're not as difficult to kill. Which can help early on. So I could understand if someone's like, well, I'm going down a biome that there really aren't that many aliens and they're aggressive and or they're very difficult to kill, then I might understand why you might not go as quickly towards might, maybe a little bit down more prosperity, a little bit more down industry.
Is that true?
But still, with that qualification said, aliens are still your science funding. It's always humorous when an AI contacts you, and of course, when they lose respect for you, then they're looking at your total beaker output, right? And it's like, oh, your science sucks. Oh, does it really? I'm at supremacy and purity 5 and 3 in harmony, and you're at 1, 1, and 0. So don't think you're looking at the whole picture here, guy or gal.
Mm-hmm. Getting that fast affinity 6-6 and set then 7-7 and then 8-8 and then basically ending the game. Because at that point, you've already slaughtered everybody. Or can slaughter everybody. Otherwise, I don't feel the need to drive all the way down prosperity for the...
-15%.
Yeah.
It's nice, I don't feel, but it's not like...
Yeah.
Not with the synergy with the hybrids now, no. So we'll specify here specifically, harmony and purity at level 5 at both of them, that's the unhealth from number of cities reduced by 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And purity supremacy at respective tier 5s, so that's the global size of population unhealth reduced by 25%. Whereas, as Imagine said, at the comparable tier for Supremacy and Harmony, it's +5.
Yeah, that's not so great.
The services like, hey, can I get +3 health per strategic resource?
Yes.
Thanks. Because that's only worth 50 health by the end of the game, or more, depending.
And even some people in our audience might be saying, yeah, but those could get canceled. Like, what if you decide to go squish on the person that you're getting the agreement from? Well, you've had all the benefit of that to that point, and you're in that much better position than that AI. So who cares?
Yeah.
At that point, it's thank you for helping me kill you, ultimately. I will put a nice card on your grave.
I'll put a gold star on your tombstone.
Mm-hmm. You were special.
What carat of gold, Mackie? Is it going to be 10 carat? Are you going to go all out, put 24 carat gold on the gravestone?
Well, might as well. We're not using it for anything else, right?
Right. Virtues, I don't know if they really mean as much to the game anymore other than here's more stuff.
As compared to vanilla, no, they're not the driving force as they used to be for a lot of what you want to do. They're complementary now.
Yeah, some of the early game stuff, like if you do want to rapid expand. But the effect the virtues have on actual overarching strategies seems to be weaker than it used to.
Yeah, it starts out pretty strong, but it doesn't have the longevity it used to have. In the news, Civilization Online open beta dates coming to the Korean market fiscal 2016. The pre-open beta sign-up date is ongoing right now from October 28th to November 29th, and the online testing schedule for the beta for the game is the 12th of November, so just a couple of days ago as of this recording, to the end of November. This title is coming to us from XL Games in South Korea. The idea, quoting from Steparoo, is that the world is going to reset every week, and during this time, players must join one of four factions. Each faction must transition into various eras real-time without loading. Victory awaits those who create the required building and speed up their research the fastest. The world is one big seamless world. Players can choose to become a worker to help build a city or a military unit to help capture enemies or to protect its citizens. They can even become workers or engineers during an offensive enemy invasion to build towers that will shoot cannons. This is a large-scale, real-time strategy, massively multiplayer online role-playing game where everyone plays a big role in helping their nations win. If you play alone, it's super slow, but if you have lots of players working together, you can start constructing even more buildings and progress faster. So this is reminding me, in some senses, of the Facebook game, Civilization Network, a game that closed down a few years ago. One comment, actually, was from Jason Cady, where he said, still hoping that it's translated for English users and allow open access to the game worldwide. Previously reported where there are some other Asian markets that are going to have Civilization Online servers that are administered by local developers, with the overseeing coming, of course, from 2K Games, whereas XL Games focuses on South Korea. The response from the people from Civilization Online and XL Games, their community manager, the account is Civilization Online Community, quote, you can play worldwide if you have a Korean friend or an ArcAge account, unquote.
Do you have a Korean friend? What? Do they have to live in Korea to be a Korean friend?
You know, I hadn't heard about this until I got the topic, so I looked at it. And I have to give it credit, at least for being an MMO that is not fantasy and not modern era shooting. So I have to give it credit on the concept. But from what I've seen, I wish there was a little more focus on the assets being a little more historic, because I've seen a lot of concepts that are not very historical. Kind of fanboyish, maybe, is the word I would want to go with. I really love Realm versus Realm, which is a type of online playing where you don't really fight as just yourself. You're really fighting for a nation or something like that. There was a game way, way back I played a lot called Dark Age of Camelot, which really had that. So when I heard this, it was really interesting. But I looked at a video and, you know, I saw siege engines and towers. And yeah, I'm liking it. But the thing that really got me was I saw a guy with a lance and armor who did literally a Final Fantasy Dragoon jump onto a castle rampart multiple times. And I'm thinking, I don't remember that being in history.
Well, I think this goes to the role-playing, perhaps, aspect of the MMORPG component.
In a sense of mechanics, like, I like it because it gives melee something to do, because people who play MMOs know that generally, you know, if you're doing this sort of siege battle sort of thing, melee doesn't have much to do. So the idea of having, for example, a Dragoon jump to get on the rampart and punch people in the face on the ramparts, yeah, that's good because it gives melee something to do. But that's not Civ. This game sort of straddles into fantasy, which I really wish it was more focused on civilization.
I think that's just a design flaw, by the way. Something like Chivalry lets melee have plenty to do in siege situations. So it's just a question of what you want to put
well,
in the game.
From what I've seen, the main selling point is that you have wars between ages, which is nice, but I wish that the concept was a little more clever and really focused more on exactly what you said, Phil. Actually take some time and think of some clever things that we've done in history. Go away from the fantasy stuff, go away from the modern shooter stuff, and have some good ideas. First, I liked the art aesthetic. You know, the first time I looked at it, I'm like, oh, that's not really that pretty. But the first thing I saw was it sort of reminded me of Team Fortress 2 and Civ 4. Those aesthetics wrapped into a little ball, which is not necessarily a bad mixture. I think it could sell. I just wish that it was, well, more about Civ than fantasy. They showed a video of a character creation, which was pretty good. I liked that there was a lot of things you could do, but some of it, again, was not very historically accurate, like glowy crystal swords or a Final Fantasy cleric robe. I mean, I wish the video had been a little better, because all it showed was a bunch of butts.
Well, I also think a lot of the fantasy aspect you're seeing there is that market. The Asian market simply has a different aesthetic for games than we do.
I agree, but
they're trying to break in. They're using the Civ name because it's kind of popular, but they are trying to build an MMO that will sell in Asia.
Well, I mean, here's the market, because if you're going to blend in history and fantasy, who's going to be playing the game here?
A massive amount of people to be their market over there. They're not necessarily targeting at us.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
They're literally not targeting us because it's not available over here.
Yeah, they are targeting those people who would probably not be playing Civilization otherwise. So they're showing them elements of what they're already playing as kind of a hook to get into the game. Similar to when we were talking about Civilization Revolution in the late noughts, and we were looking at what they were talking about, including in the controls and the graphics and the mechanics. And we're not that target. We were not that market. So I think 2K, in licensing this to XL Games, as Mackie and Matt Jin have been getting at, is ultimately they want to make money. Perhaps they're able to get people in the door, then maybe they'll start pushing and maybe even promoting those aspects of the game or have the game evolve where it becomes more strategic. Once you've got people kind of past that initial, oh, this is familiar, but not really familiar, I'm kind of nervous, I'm scared, and then try to get them to expand on what it is that they already understand, and then to be able to differentiate itself from existing titles in the market that are massively multiplayer online, other than the fact that Civilization is in the title.
Well, I sort of disagree with that, because since the game is sort of a weekly run, you go through ancient all the way to whatever, modern, I don't know. Since that's a weekly thing, you know, you get to experience the game pretty quickly. You can get the hook pretty early because since it is just a daily era thing, it's not that complicated. It shouldn't be too much of a hook to get into other games.
Well, they're probably thinking if someone is playing a massive multiplayer online game, the idea is that you're kind of all in, quote, right? Like you want someone to be playing as much as possible. And if people already have that particular title or titles that they're playing, it's like, why would I move myself from this established universe into another one? Well, you're wondering, we have this, we have that. But by the way, since you're here, now here's a little bit more of the historical aspect.
Well,
it's going to be that fantasy stuff, I think, absolutely. I don't think that's ever going to go away. And perhaps they're just talking more about and showing more of that than the historical. But even if they're not, maybe once they have a player base and they feel like they've captured that market, then they might say, okay, now that we have this base, we can start looking at doing other things in the game to perhaps attract people who might not otherwise be playing massively multiplayer online games by hooking them in with some of the more historical aspects that we associate with Civ.
Okay, so how long is this game going to continue then? Because the fact is, when it comes to MMOs, you have to establish a community, and usually most people kind of resist changing MMOs. That's fact. So when you have an MMO that does this, okay, sure, let's say that we establish that we like the game and goes in for, let's say, a year and a half. what, do you start changing it more historically later? Because maybe people didn't like it, the historical aspect. They liked the fantasy aspect. You can't really just start changing the focus of the game in the middle of when people like it. That was something that was awful in some early MMOs where they changed it from a PvP focus to a PvE focus. People didn't like that and left the game and just played WoW instead.
Right. Instead of player versus player, player versus environment.
Yeah, so...
Well, I guess it kind of comes down to, we don't know what the timelines from 2K is in terms of saying this game must make a profit and what that profit margin is. We don't know what they feel that the break even is in terms of how much they've already invested in the game, how much they're going to have to continue to invest in order to maintain this, right? Because they're going to have servers 24/7. Those need to be online. There's going to need to be monitoring. You're going to have mechanisms for people who are being dicks or other adjectives that we could use to describe that behavior to get people to stay in the game. But you're right. It's going to be a balance that if you start changing it, are you changing it because you want to bring in more people? Or is it that you didn't bring in enough people initially? So if for every person you lose, you gain two people after those changes in order to try to make this profitable, then you're ahead. I guess we don't know exactly what the degree is going to be between the strategy and the fantasy. Although I expect in the cases of a lot of the videos, the quote-unquote flash is probably better represented with the fantasy aspect as opposed to the strategic at this point in time.
It's an MMO. Seriously, they can't really get that deep into strategy because it's still an MMO. A bunch of people who, in theory, are going to work together to get things done, but it's still an MMO. People are going to want to out and go do stuff and make things flashy and yada, yada, yada. Guess what? Too bad. You can just ignore that stuff. It's not going to be purely historical because people like to make their online avatars fancy and other things, well, whether you can, like it or not.
Like I said, the concept could be a little more clever. Looking at the systems that we have in Civilization, we could have a system where you can improve land based on your choices in Civ, like Civ workers. Or I wish there was a mechanic where, you know, maybe you could trade materials with other factions and potentially enemy factions, because what's going to happen is that obviously going to be one faction that's going to be overpowering the other two or three. And if you could trade or, you know, work together against other factions, that would be interesting, you know. Early MMOs had something like that. If you were the underdog, you could just team up with the secondary power. You know, that helped. I wish that that was in Civ Online.
In some previous previews that we have seen, conversation has been that one of the victory conditions is, of course, your quote-unquote classic domination. But at the same time, even in be able to ultimately do that, there was talk about that one faction would have to work with another faction in some respects, because before you're going to be able to go and take over somebody, whether it's that faction or another one, you're going to have to work with at least one other, because based on starting conditions and the ability to progress, you're going to be lacking something that you need and they're going to be lacking something that they need. And only through cooperation are you going to be able to get that for at least a particular period of time. So hopefully it's not just about that, about the fighting, as it were. Hopefully there is meaningful cooperation and the fact that you're going to have to cooperate at a certain point in time. But as for the strategic element, I think also from 2K's perspective, when you're looking at the audience, how much are we going to have to educate the player? Players, I think, like to learn, but they don't want to feel like they're being taught. They don't want to feel like it's work. So how much would they have to educate the massively multi-online player to play Civilization, the MMO, as opposed to playing the MMO that is Civilization, if that makes sense? And I think that's going to be a difficult balance for them. And I think it can either go, there's going to be forgiveness on XL Games and 2K Games' part because this is the first time they're doing this, or it's going to be particularly brutal because you should know what Civilization is and is not. You should know what a massively multiplayer online game is and is not. And if you don't get it right the first time, you're going to get burned and you're never going to be able to recover.
Yeah, I agree with all your points. And I really think that instead of kind of, as you're saying, sort of blending it in order to hook people, but I really think it should have just been its own genre, you know, make it strong from the beginning. This is Civilization Online, but we'll see how it goes. Don't have much faith in it.
It could very well emerge that even though it started off as quote-unquote another MMO trying to be a little different, maybe it'll be able to carve out a niche, and that niche will be considered profitable enough in the Korean market, South Korean market, and the other few markets that 2K Games has already said you're going to be able to play the game from the outset. that perhaps then if that model is successful, then I think the idea, and they've even kind of said, well, we would like to then look at bringing it to other markets. But then, of course, the question becomes, if that model is successful, say, in South Korea, does that necessarily mean it's going to be successful in Canada or the United States? Maybe, maybe not. Does then that mean that if we want to bring it to Canada or the United States, then we have to fundamentally change the game so that way there's Civilization Online and what it looks like in Canada and North America, and Civilization Online what it looks like in Asia, which I think would be a mistake. But perhaps there's a way that they can balance that and ultimately make it profitable, something that people not just want to play because, oh, this is new and shiny, but they probably want someone who is playing it today to be playing it 1, 2, 3 years from now. And in terms of how they're going to be making money, probably through microtransactions, right? This constant, oh, I'd like a little boost here, I'd like a little boost there, which then, of course, gets the question of, if that's the model as opposed to advertising or in addition to advertising, can you buy your way to victory? Which is a whole other question, which some people say, yes, that's perfectly fine. That's fine so long as you can grind alternatively, right? You're either going to put in the time or you're going to put in the money. Or yes, you should. No, you shouldn't. This is a pretty big, grand experiment here.
I can already see how there would be some sort of microtransaction. Since it runs weekly, you know, you can get some sort of boost before each week, you know, something like that. Pay something like $5 to get some boost for the next week. Yeah, I can see how that would work.
Or perhaps you could say, you know what, you can get a microtransaction and you can get a benefit in this game. But at the end of the week,
yeah.
Reset.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
So don't think you're going to be able to keep investing more and more money. And then by the time you're a month or two in, why would anybody want to join? Because these people have been dominating the game from the beginning. Because it's reset every week and that's a defined period of time, I think that would actually help with that.
Now, the thing I have about that, if one faction is excelling on the first day, I'm unsure of how they're going to do with underdog factions, you know, by the end of the week. Well, I don't know how their economy or how their development is going to be throughout the eras, quote unquote. But usually when you start strong, you continue to end strong, just like a 4X game, honestly.
Hey, guess what, folks? Are you thinking you're not going to be able to snowball in Civilization Online like you could snowball in Civilization for the PC? Don't worry, we've got you covered.
Yep.
I don't know, maybe with Civilization Online being massively multiplayer online, I don't know how large these factions are going to be, but let's just choose some round numbers here. Let's say there's 100 people in this particular faction,
sure.
But it's 5 or 10 people that are putting in a lot of the time and or the money to make the whole faction itself strong. I guess then there's the question of, could other people join into an existing faction and then grind more and buy more in order to be able to catch up or and to mustard and relish in the opportunity? Or is it going to be that you're just going to have to then have a faction with like 500 people or even just 200 people? But then just because you have 200 people, does that really make you necessarily better than with a team with 100? Because now you've got 200 people to have to try to coordinate as opposed to 100. So I think that's also going to be something that they're going to have to flesh out and balance.
Yeah.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Well, I know what my religion will be in the next Turncast.
Denouncing Dan.
Yeah, whatever Civ Dan rolls, denouncing that.
Thanks, Mackie.
Or just denounce Condorism. There you go.
Oh, even better, yes.
Whoa.
And then all you have to do is use the Cleansing Heresy cast a spell on Dan. You get a war score bonus.
I will Condor all of you.
No,
yeah, good luck with that.
What's that mean?
It means he's going to declare a war on you, and then you're going to take all of his cities away from him.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, speaking of away.
Yep, okay. Let's get out of here before this gets any weirder. This has been Polycast episode 242. Wasn't that an episode? I've been joined by our guest, Drusian.
You're saying hello.
Never Jerk. Going to say it right.
No, you're the only one who doesn't say it right. Everyone else is caught on to it. You're just being a jerk.
Pretty much.
And the regular host, Makalua.
Since when has Machin ever pronounced anything right? I mean, Ragasu.
Hey, that's a thing now. No making fun of
Benin.
Is that like a soup?
Like a stoop.
There you go.
The main team.
Don't worry, I also do Holy Wars, listeners. Just you wait.
And some guy named Quick.
Denounced.
And that's me, Adrian. Bye-bye. Hey, Dan.
Yeah?
Stop playing with your mic.
Uh-oh. Having issues with my mic?
No, we can hear you, but it sounds like you're just tapping it around.
It's not, yeah, like you're rolling it over the table or touching, something while you're speaking.
Yeah, touching your mic inappropriately.
Bad touch,
maybe.
Bad touch.
All right, just a second here. I think, it's unusual.
There's no such thing as a bad touch.
How is that? Is that better?
Not really. It might just be that your mic is picking up extra stuff as you move around and things.
Yeah.
It could be. How's that? Better still?
Yeah, I don't hear any rustling now.
Yeah, it's a little less rustling. Okay.
Okay. It's good to know, because I'd rather know about that now and not hear about it in editing and be like, thanks for telling me, folks.
Yeah. Unless it floats down, in which case you blatantly ignore it. Seriously, why is that tech more expensive than everything else?
Because it's pure. It's not diluted by Harmony and Supremacy.
It's disgusting. I can
dilute you in a minute.
We're just continuing the discussion from before, but it's similar. just go hybrids and kill everything. There you go.
Still, we're trying to have a discussion here.
Okay, fine. Purity is the best affinity to go still because it's trolling.
Actually, I'm going to agree with him because purity plus harmony actually is even better.
There we go. I'm agreeing with Mackie a lot today. Something's not right, but we'll go.
Yeah. Going back to the pie analogy, it's like with Vanilla, we had the crust and the crust was falling apart constantly and the filling was questionable. Now, the crust is pretty cohesive, but the choice of ingredients and flavor profile, not to mention the fact that we're missing the spices, is still present.
Dan, why are you insisting on this? Come on now.
I thought it was a weird segue. I didn't know why he was going to...
We want to continue on to the next topic. We can just do it.
Dan just wants more pie. Speaking of it, it's Dan's topic anyways, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the best plan is to go 5-5-5 with all of them so you get both all the health bonuses that way for the 25% population and 25% city reduction. And then for that, just keep going in one direction. Not that one direction.
Uh-huh. Mackie anticipated. Next comment.
Add one direction.
Briefly, speaking of numbers.
Really briefly.
What about numbers?
Hey, Mackie, you actually had a title. That was Dan's attempt to throw it to you.
Yeah, attempt to throw. I think it went whoosh in the wrong direction.
I was going to say it fell splat at your feet, but okay. Yeah, sure.
I just looked at it like, what is this?
Dan's really bad at throwing things. I mean,
yeah.
I'll aim next time.
He can throw a football 60 yards. No? Okay.
No.
I can't.
Dan in football, I don't know.
What in the world?
Speaking of what in the world?
Carmen Sandiego?
You stole that from me.
All of us at the same time. Carmen Sandiego? What?
Just kids.
Well, why don't they still show kids that in schools? It would be great. They'd actually learn where things are instead of where's this thing?
There's an app for that.
Of
course.
It's culturally relevant.
Golden.
Not what you do to the grave.
He's probably got like some kind of mind control going on.
Mm.
Maybe he's like witch or something.
Oh, I don't want to talk about that game.
So you're saying switched Dan into Imagine. What?
What? Ooh, jazz last night, guys.
Vampires are bad.
Okay, Dan, how do you type that out? There's your title. As soon as you figure out
how to spell. You can do the wah, 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 wah thing from Charlie Brown. There you go.
Okay, so the wah-wah's got a W-A-H, and the rah, 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 is that like an R-E-H? Rah, rah.
Or is it like a sad trombone? Wah, wah, wah.
That's the sound you make for the end of each episode.
Oh, okay.
Record date November 14th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.